Welcome to Southern Mysteries, the podcast where a couple of chicks from the sticks explore mysteries, myths, and legends of the South. In this episode, prepare yourself to meet one of the most controversial women of the 19th century, Loretta Jeanetta Velasquez. Now, her story has been shrouded in mystery and debated for generations. She challenged gender, social, and ethnic boundaries during the Civil War. So who was she? Did she really exist? Or is her story one of the greatest hoaxes of her time? And what made her story so dangerous that she's been virtually erased from history?
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight, and I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right. All right.
Thanks for listening to episode 10 of Southern Mysteries. I'm Shannon Ballard, along with my friend, Tracy Lee.
And we want to say welcome to our new friends who've discovered the podcast over the holidays and have reached out to us to let us know that you're listening. We're so thankful for all of you who listen, because it would be kind of sad to share a podcast and not have any listeners. And we want to say a special thanks to Nikki at nikkispodcast.com for picking Southern Mysteries as her January special spotlight on her blog. She wrote a very sweet review about us. She must have gotten the check. But no, Nikki's blog is dedicated to lists, reviews, discussions, and news related to her favorite podcast. So make sure you check it out at nikkispodcast.com. Okay, it's time to dive into this week's Southern Mystery, and it's a twisty-turny story that takes us from Cuba to Louisiana to Missouri, Arkansas, Baltimore, and beyond. So let's get started.
Well, she was known by many names, including Marianne Keith, Ann Williams, and Loretta Williams. But by all accounts, her real name was Loretta Jeanetta Velasquez. She was born into this heiress. Aristocratic. Mm-hmm. I can't say the word aristocratic. Okay.
Think about Aristocats.
How does that help? I've never seen that. What is that?
The cats. They're Aristocats. The Disney movie.
Now when I think of cats, I'm trying to think. Okay. Cuban cats? Okay. Okay. But by all accounts, her real name was Loretta Jeanetta Velasquez. She was born into a very wealthy family in Cuba, in Havana, in 1842. And her father was a Spanish government official who owned plantations in Mexico and in Cuba. So as a young girl, Loretta, she developed this admiration and obsession with her heroine, Joan of Arc. She desired to do really great things and make a name for herself as a woman of courage who would fight for a great cause, just like Joan of Arc. And you remember, I'm sure, Joan dressed as a man to lead French forces against their enemies. So as a little girl, when Loretta would think of Joan of Arc and think of doing great things, she equated that with being a man and dressing as a man. And that's important to know about her. Now, when Loretta was a very young girl, she was about 7 years old, her family sends her to New Orleans for her education. It was pretty standard for families to do that at the time. So when Loretta comes to America in 1849, the Mexican War had just ended. You've got Mexicans who have been portrayed as barbaric people, and that racism really extended to most Latinos. And that meant it was really hard for Loretta to fit in as she comes to America. And she really struggled. So she decided to pass herself off as a darker-skinned white woman. And it really seemed to work fairly well for her early on, so she could fit in. But at the core of Loretta's existence, she was a rebel who didn't naturally fit in with what society and her family wanted for her. Because here she was in New Orleans, just trying to fit in with the people she's meeting. And all the while, she's dreaming of not even being in the world that she is in and that she's come from with all the money and the wealth. You know, what was expected of her was to finish her education in New Orleans and then marry and have the children that her family wanted her to have. And that was the expectation for all women at that time. It's what she did. So deep down, she still had her Joan of Arc dream, and she took to dressing up in her male cousin's clothes and dreaming of leaving her house and going on a great adventure. And as you can imagine, when her family finds that she's been doing this, like dressing up as a man and kind of sneaking out and just trying to find adventure in New Orleans, it did not go over very well. They know she's really rebellious, and they decide it is time for her to get married. So they find a perfect fellow Cuban for Loretta to marry. I know we've only just met Loretta, but can you imagine that she gave in to that?
Probably not.
Yeah. No, she didn't. She decides, you know what? I'm going to do it the Loretta way. And that's how everything in her life is going to be, like, from this point forward. She decides to steal her best friend's boyfriend,
of course,
who happened to be an American man. And she elopes with this man. His name is William. And even though he's her adventurer, she still ends up doing the very thing that every good woman did at the time. She marries him. They have two children. So she, by the time she's 18 years old, she has two children. Because you, like, I'm
overwhelmed with the responsibility of a dog. I can't imagine another human being at 18.
It reminds you of how grateful to be for the choices that we have as women now. Well, when Loretta is pregnant with her third child at 18, her husband, who was serving in the federal army, he was sent to this really dangerous Indian territory. So what they decided is she would move to St. Louis to be closer to him, but still in a safer area as she waited for him to finish his service in that territory. Sadly, soon after she arrives in St. Louis, she loses her baby, her third child, which is a tragedy in and of itself. But it was only the beginning of tragedy for Loretta and her children. Soon after, this horrible fever comes to St. Louis. And as we know back then, something as simple as a fever could kill you. I mean, it's mind-blowing to think. You know, you get a fever now, like you go get Tylenol, Advil, whatever, and it's taken care of within hours, hopefully. But back then, it could cost you your life. And sadly, both of her surviving children contracted that fever and they died.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. You've got Loretta just overcome with grief and with guilt. She had dreamed of adventure. She ended up having children, but she loved her children. Mm-hmm. But they were all gone now in such a short period of time. I mean, I can't imagine how traumatic this is to her.
And do you know if her husband was still in service when she lost her children? So she's all by herself in a place where she's never been.
I mean, she's grieving so much. And she writes in a memoir that that later on, you know, as the days go on, that she'll be in the house by herself and she'll walk into the nursery only to be reminded that her kids aren't there anymore. I know. It's just overwhelming. So a little more time passes before her husband, William, is able to come back to her to come home for a little while. But by then, it's 1861, and he knows war is coming. They're all aware of that. They know it's coming soon. And by this time, his home state of Texas is kind of on the edge and getting ready to secede. And he and Loretta realize there's a really important decision he has to make. Remember, he's in the federal army.
Right.
So when Texas secedes, he resigns from the federal army and decides to join the Confederacy and fight for what he believed in, for his homeland. So that's where they were. That's the situation they're in. Loretta is desperate, though, because once again, her husband has come home. She's had that a little bit of time with him, and then he is about to leave and go off to war, and she's not having it. She begs him to come with him. And of course, he's like, you can't come. Right. It's war. You can't be in this situation. So he leaves to fight for Texas in the Civil War. And soon after, she learns that there was an accident with William's weapon. And he died when that weapon accidentally went off. Literally, all the hope that Loretta had, I mean, of him ever coming home, it's gone. And, you know, grief and loneliness, it can drive you to do some pretty unexpected things and take you to some unexpected places. And I think that's part of Loretta's story, is that grief and a little bit of loneliness, too. Loretta decides to go get measured for a Confederate uniform. And she decides she's going to join the Confederate Army as Harry T. Buford. By July of 1861, Harry T. Buford, Loretta Velasquez, is fighting in the Battle of Bull Run in Manassas. And she was fearless. She was bent on showing that she was as good as any other man on that battlefield, along with many other women that also were doing the same thing that Loretta was doing, that, you know, hadn't been proved until recent history. It's pretty unbelievable to think of this, of Loretta or any other woman pulling this off. But especially remember, you're talking about a Hispanic woman in a white man's war. And a war that we generally think of as being black and white. But she was not the only Hispanic person to fight in the Civil War. There were thousands. But she was one of the only Hispanic women we know that pulled this off. So think about this. The Civil War, it shook up social norms for everyone, but especially women in the North and in the South. It wasn't just Southerners being affected by this. There were many women who fought in the Civil War, and they dressed as men to be able to either fight next to their husband or fight in memory of them. And they had this desire to fight and to make a difference. And it's estimated that nearly 500 to 1,000 women did that, went into military service for either short periods of time or long service. It just kind of depended on how long they could get away with it. Because the moment somebody found out you're a woman, you're discharged and you have to go for like sexual inappropriateness.
Okay, so they were actually in combat. It wasn't like they were serving in the medical tent.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay. And this is where it comes into modern day history and research, because there are still Civil War reenactors. You know, the whole thing. If you're listening from another country, I want to clarify this, because here in America, there's something known as Civil War reenactments. Mm-hmm. And people go out and they recreate war scenes from the Civil War. And it's this celebrated thing. And to this day, there are still Civil War reenactors that refuse to let a woman come on to the field to be a part of a Civil War reenactment because the women didn't fight the war. But history has proven that to be wrong. These women, they were desperate. Some of them believed in their cause so much, whether they were from the North or the South, because it happened with the Union and with the Confederacy, that they kind of defied their own family and went out to do it. Some of their family members knew. Some sisters went to fight next to their brothers. Women, of course, going to fight next to their husbands. But it is a reality. It is the National Military Archives. There are now records of at least 500 to 1,000 women in military service during the Civil War. And you think of, it's only been in the past few years that women could go into combat today.
Yeah.
It's powerful.
Yeah.
So you have to question and ask, you know, how are they able to get away with it? Here's the medical inspection from the Civil War. Three questions. Do you have 2 feet?
Yes.
Do you have 2 arms?
Yes.
Do you have 2 good eyes to see how to fight?
Yes.
Congratulations, you're now in the military. And you really, when you think of it too, there is a large number of soldiers, you know, they were very young on the battlefield and the uniforms were really baggy. So the notion of gender back then, it either meant, okay, you got a pair of pants on, you are a man. If you have a dress on, you're a woman. So a person with 2 arms, 2 legs, 2 good eyes to see to fight during the war, they are considered to be a man. So Loretta's all in and she's pulling off the notion that she's a man. And a Confederate man. So the next thing she does, when I read this account, and it, remember, this is from her own memoirs, her firsthand story. It's kind of heartbreaking, the decision that she made next. But you can't rewrite history. You can't skip over this very important part. She bought a slave named Bob. And she used owning a slave as another way to pass herself off as a Confederate soldier. You know, when I was reading about this and doing this research, I was thinking about how here you've got this woman trying to expand her life and test all of her boundaries because she's free and wants an adventure. And all the while she's enslaving a man. You know, he's fighting next to her with no choice. And he knew her secret. And the irony of all of this is her life depended on him keeping her secret.
Which he did.
As far as we know, yeah. So Loretta, she has this slave Bob that's fighting next to her. They're fighting at the Battle of Shiloh, and as the battle ends, Bob claims to get lost, and he escapes, and he ends up in federal territory and was a free man. And when I found that out, I was hooping and hollering, and I was like, yes, Bob, yes, congratulations, sir. So once again, Loretta, she's alone. And after the battle, she's on the field. She's a part of burial duty where, you know, soldiers had to go out and they were working to bury their dead. And all of a sudden she feels this burning feeling and she realizes she's been shot. And she apparently passes out because the next thing she knows, she wakes up to the sound of train tracks and she's looking around just trying. She's so disoriented, but she's trying to figure out what's going on. And she notices and recognizes men next to her. And she realizes she's on a train with fellow soldiers who are getting medical care. She's still with the Confederacy, so she's still with her fellow troops. She has to refuse medical attention.
Because they'll know that she's a girl.
Exactly. And she decides to brave it. And to try to get through it without having a doctor check on her.
That should have been the first sign that she was a female. Right there, by just toughing it out.
When you think of it, I mean, whether you've studied the Civil War or you've just watched a movie about the Civil War, chaos of battlefield, the chaos of any medical situation and trying to care for the wounded. I mean, you know, it's horrifically graphic. Any medical attention being given to troops in that situation, it's just everything's so fast and you're moving so feverishly. I don't think anybody probably gave it a second thought at the time. Later on, I'm sure they did. But she does survive. And in the summer of 1863, she's in Richmond, Virginia. And at the time, a martial law is being enforced in Richmond. So everybody is on edge. I mean, this is a city that was under more scrutiny than ever because the Confederacy was really desperate. They had detectives everywhere trying to catch any federal spies trying to work their way into Confederate territory. So everyone kind of gave each other a second look, basically. It was complete paranoia because you're like, who could that person be? Who could that person? Are they trying to get information from us? So a man notices what he calls Loretta's feminine way, and he snitches on her. He questions her and goes to authorities. And Loretta Janetta Velasquez, she's arrested and accused of being a federal spy. So Loretta is now in prison, and she's facing execution for treason. And she thinks it's all over. General Winder, who is overseeing her case, decides to release her in July of 1863, saying that she could offer unique services for the Confederacy. So what do you think a unique service could be for the Confederacy?
I don't know. My mind automatically went to a really dark place. And I hope that I'm wrong. So what was it?
A spy.
Okay, yeah, it was not where I went.
They see the complete value in what she had done. She had tricked all of them.
Okay.
I mean, this woman had been in a lot of the major battles of the Civil War and survived them. She was tough. The woman, remember, Harry T. Buford, that soldier, had refused medical treatment when shot. Turns out, they find out why he was hiding it. She was hiding it. But they realize, you know what? She could be an incredible spy for the Confederacy. So Loretta's new job, this is so crazy. Loretta's new job is to dress as a woman and go on scouting expeditions.
What?
Yeah. So this Cuban woman poses as a dark-skinned white woman, gets into the Confederate Army posing as Harry T. Buford, a white man. And now the Confederacy says, we found you out, but let's dress you up as a woman and go on scouting expeditions. And that's exactly what she did. I mean, she was like, hey, this saves my life. I'll do whatever they want me
right.
to. So she's passing lines of the North and the South. She's thriving economically because she's transporting Confederate money around. And she's getting her share of it as a spy. But what the Confederacy didn't see coming, refused to see coming, was Loretta's exposure to both sides of the war. The more you're traveling...
Okay.
North and back into the South and then North again and talking to people that otherwise you probably would have never met and had conversations with.
Yeah.
The more you're learning about both sides really in some areas profiting from slavery and this whole war and supporting the Confederacy becomes a little bit of a disillusioned thing for Loretta. So she decides she's going to head north to Baltimore and she goes to work for the Union as a Secret Service double agent.
That is so great.
Is this not like the wildest story you've
ever... I know,
ever...
I can't keep up. Like, I don't know. And she's just everybody and everything and...
Or no one. Because still
right.
to this day, some people say she didn't exist. I still don't even... Like, I'm still like, wait.
Oh my gosh, that's a whole different arm that she may not even exist.
Yeah. So did she really defect from the Confederacy? Or was she spying on the North while making it look like she was, you know, the whole double agent thing? Was she still trying to get information for the Confederacy while telling the Union she had flipped? So there's just so many angles to this. So she writes in her memoir that she published years later that her prejudice against the North had vanished after moving North and that she really was loyal to the federal forces that she was spying for. She's haunted by what she'd seen on the battlefield, by her choices. She was guilty over the purchase of Bob as a slave. Even though she says she only ever treated him with respect, still the idea that she thought she could buy a man and use that man to try to perpetuate what she needed to perpetuate. You know, she felt guilt over that. And she's seeing more and more and more of this impact of slavery and how people are hurting because of it. So she continues to be loyal to the federal forces, and she works as a spy up until the very end of the war in 1865. She finishes that journey. So, Loretta Velasquez, this is crazy. Wow. So you fast forward to 1875. It's a decade later. There's this handbill being published, and it's called A Woman in Battle, and it's printed by Loretta Velasquez, and she announces herself as a woman who fought in the Civil War, admitting that she was a Cuban woman. Okay, y'all. 1875, a decade after the Civil War, and this woman is telling you that she fought in the war when everybody at that time was like, no woman was in the war. There are even stories of other women who went and fought and posed as men in the Civil War that hid that until the end of their life when they were in like hospitals and retirement homes were set up by the, you know, Confederacy and by Union forces for veterans. There's so many layers to this. So that this woman would come forward in the culture of 1875 and say, hey, what up, y'all? I was fighting in the Civil War as Harriet T. Buford, and I'm a Cuban woman, which, you know, that took another layer of that just shocked people. And she, by publishing that memoir, she becomes one of only two Latinas to have a memoir published in the 19th century in America. So it's really big news. It was a very big deal because it propelled her to media celebrity status. For some people, that's a great place to be. For other people, you realize it's not a place you want to be.
Yeah.
Because you become a target. Yeah. So news outlets, they start questioning her accounts of her life and her experiences. And they don't believe what she's throwing out. And soon people, they start to believe that it's all been a hoax. And there was no Harriet T. Buford who served in the Civil War. There was no Loretta Ginetta Velasquez, that somebody just pinned this account and published it and wanted a grand controversial story. Just a bunch of tall tales.
What is the possibility of that? Do we know for sure that she existed?
Actually, I do have the answer to that.
Okay.
It's coming later. Okay, so you can't help but wonder if she's real or not. It's natural. So this woman's story, is it true? Is it not true? Had people fallen for one of the greatest hoaxes of the 1870s when this account comes out and they're reading it? Well, one man wanted everyone to believe that it was all a hoax, and he needed it to be a hoax and wanted it to be a hoax because of what he was trying to do and the work he was doing. His name, Jubal Early. He was one of the leaders of what historians call the Lost Cause, along with a man named Edward Pollard, who was an editor and helped publish Jubal Early's works and worked with him on the writings. And the Lost Cause, if you're not familiar, it was a movement that is still very alive today. And the whole effort was to rehabilitate the image of the Confederacy early on following the Civil War. And when I say early on, I mean the day the war ended, Robert E. Lee at Appomattox, the war ending, there were already efforts in place to start rehabilitating the Confederacy on the part of Jubal Early. And the whole concept of the Lost Cause, it romanticizes the war, and it really did, and still to this day, it pushes this narrative that the war was a just and noble cause for the Confederacy. A lot of us also believe secession was, you know, treason against the United States government, but to them, nope, it was just a just and noble cause, and it needed to be protected. And some people still feel it needs to be protected. So consider these two men. They're leading this effort to shut down any negative images of Confederate veterans during the Civil War, not the men at the heart of who they were, the cause they were fighting for. It's hard enough for these guys with the Union being together again and the country trying to move forward and heal, right? Because it's not helping their narrative. Right. But here comes this woman, of all people, writing a book, and she's telling what Jubal and Ed said were lies. You know, she's talking about her eyes being open to the horrors of slavery. And the reason they were open is because the men she was fighting next to, her choices to own a slave, and what she saw as she traveled north and traveled south, and the impact of it, you know, across the country. Mm-hmm. Consider that. And then here are the three basic tenets of the Lost Cause movement. It's at its very core. Number one is that the Confederate fight was heroic. The Confederate soldiers, they were good Christian gentlemen doing what God wanted them to do with the highest of integrity, fighting to uphold the institution of slavery. Number two is that the belief that slavery was a benevolent institution, that slaves were happy, they were well treated, they didn't even want anything to change. And number three was the belief that slavery was not the root cause of the war. Those are the three basic tenets of the Lost Cause movement. So through that lens, you can understand why a Latina woman who dresses a man, fought for the Confederacy, and then dresses a woman to spy on the Confederacy for the Union would get Jubal's panties all up in a wad. Mm-hmm. She was messing with his cause, and he was not having it. And in his opinion, she just had to be shut down. So Jubal decides he's going to write letters to really powerful people he knew to try to control the message. And he portrays Loretta as an all-and-out whore. I mean, he calls her a prostitute and a woman of poor standing, and especially as a Hispanic woman, that nothing that she said and wrote about could be true. That no woman had fought in the Civil War, and that she just written a memoir of lies.
So it was all fiction.
And of course, he went for the prostitute angle.
Of course.
Because what greater way and what easier way to ruin a woman in 1875 than to, you know, attack her integrity like that.
Right.
So these people that he wrote to, they believed him, they trusted him, and they worked with him to assassinate her character. And it worked pretty well because, you know, when you think back to high school, junior high, even in college, did you ever hear the name Loretta Velasquez?
No.
Did that ever come up?
No, this is the first time I've heard about her.
I mean, I minored in political science when I was in college in the early 90s. Studied the Civil War. Her name was never mentioned. The women fighting in the Civil War were never mentioned because it's still history that, I mean, in the past couple of decades it's been proven and documented now, and it's historical records. Families had records, and they've been verified by the military archives of the United States. But it's just so crazy. It's like she just disappears. Now, the one thing we do know is that Loretta, in the middle of this attack, she wrote to Jubal Early and asked to meet him in person, because Loretta, as we know, is a pretty fearless person. Mm-hmm. I mean, this woman had survived wars, like battlefields, had survived being a spy and going like from territory to territory. She was of no fear of this man. And Jubal tells her when they meet, basically tells her that only men can speak the truth of war. And that's how it ends for him. That's his final call on it. So with that, the word hoax stuck with her book for over a century.
What about the truth? She was an actual person?
Meet Maria Aggie Carter. Okay, she's a documentary filmmaker, and she was working on a project and had heard about Loretta Velasquez. And in her community, I mean, she would tell you, you know, she had heard the name before, it would pop up here and there. But the more she thought about it, the more she was like, I mean, has anybody ever tried to figure out if she was really real, if it's not a hoax, you know, and what the story is here? So she ends up connecting with the senior military archivist at the National Military Archives in Washington, D.C. The woman's name is Deanne Blanton. And Deanne Blanton has written so many articles. She's done so much research. She's an expert in the area of those hundreds of women who dressed as men to fight and were in the midst of combat during the Civil War. I mean, Deanne is an expert. So Maria Aggie Carter, she calls Deanne and she asked flat out, she said, was this even a real person? Or was it just a hoax that people fell for? And this filmmaker, she's asked to come to the National Military Archives in D.C. because Deanne Blanton says, well, there are things I wanted to tell you and I want to show you, but I need you to see it in person because I need to end the debate. And the filmmaker, Marie Aggie Carter's own words, here's what happened.
I went to the National Archives, and there in the halls of our nation's library, the archives that hold military records for the Confederacy and the Union, we found pay stubs for Loretta Velasquez's spying missions. We found her request for a commission. We found letters and newspaper articles indicating that she had actually been arrested for posing as a man and suspected of being a spy. And I realized this was a real person. And what I wanted to know is, why didn't we know about this incredible woman and the other 1,000 women who had fought in the American Civil War?
I'm so excited that she's a real person.
She's real.
I'm excited.
Loretta Velasquez, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say everything that's in her memoir is true, because if you actually read her book, it's called A Woman in Battle. Mm-hmm. There are some pretty wild stories told after her Civil War service. But when it comes to Harry T. Buford, when it comes to her Civil War service and Loretta Velasquez, they're one and the same. And their records to prove, like, her Civil War service, spying, that part of it, it's true. So take that, Jubal Early.
Loretta, Loretta, Loretta. You go, girl.
So by the end of her life, Loretta Velasquez, she is she's speaking out against slavery. She continues to do that for the rest of her life. And she's also gone back to her roots. She's speaking out for Cuban independence as well. She never forgets the country she came from. And I love this quote from her memoir because I think it's so timely. She says, what a woman may do if only she dares and dares to do greatly.
Oh, my main question, and this, did she ever find Bob? Like when she had the realization, you know, that epiphany that she had about her belief system being off, did she ever find Bob?
I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I don't know what happened to Bob, but the answer may be, I wasn't able to read the entire memoir. Mm-hmm.
Well, she lived a lot of life.
Exactly, she did. What I would encourage you to do as you're listening to, if you want to learn more about Loretta Velasquez, I highly recommend that you watch the documentary that Maria Aggie Carter, that she released. It was with PBS just a few years ago. It's called Rebel. Mm-hmm. I was able to watch it on Amazon Prime. It was free, so it's available in many different forms. And read Loretta's memoir. It's like the longest title ever. It's called A Woman in Battle, The Civil War Narrative of Loretta Ginetta Velasquez, Cuban Woman and Confederate Soldier.
Nice.
So anyway, it's really powerful. And some of it is still disputed to this day. So I'd read it and judge it for, you know, for yourself. There's an online version you can read for free, and it's courtesy of it's a project called Documenting the American South, and it's from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. It's very cool that they still make this available to the public, and you can find the link in our show notes. Okay, it's time for
the Sassy Podcast Pick of the Week.
Okay, this week it can only be one podcast, and it's Uncivil. They're one of the big dogs. I would consider them to be one of the big dogs. They're part of Gimlet Media. And usually we feature fellow independent podcasters, but Uncivil is such an important podcast, especially considering what we've talked about here today. Uncivil, if you haven't heard of it, it's a history podcast. It's hosted by these journalists, Jack Kitt and Chinjerai Kumanyika. And as they put it, they ransack the official version of the Civil War, and they take on the history that we grew up with and fill in the gaps of some history maybe we've never even heard. And they've just gotten to the truth of so many incredible stories, including there is an episode called The Soldier, where they talk about women and the discovery and the research that's been done now about women who fought during the Civil War. And they've also taken on all of the perceptions of the Civil War, even down to the music of the Civil War. One of my favorite episodes of Uncivil, it's called The Song. And what's the first thing you think of when you think of the song Dixie?
The Ole Miss fight song that we can't play.
Okay,
anymore.
Yeah, true. Tracy's from, born and bred here in Mississippi, so that's an association that you have.
I think about the state of Mississippi, I think about home.
Unfortunately, one of the first things I think of is slavery. I'm from Alabama. Heart of Dixie, I think of that. I also think of, you know, in the past few weeks here, if you follow the news, Dixie Stampede, Dolly Parton's Dixie Stampede, they're taking Dixie off of that name because generally you think of the word Dixie, you think of the South, and you think of the Civil War. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more to it than that. So I encourage you, listen to the episode, start there with a song from Uncivil and see what you think. Definitely give them a listen and check it out because it's it might just turn your world upside down.
Well, we're back in 2 weeks with something that is terrifying called the Rougarou. Are you familiar?
I've just heard it through the context of like little kids, something to do with little kids. I don't know, adults and children, like if you're naughty and not a good Christian, somehow the Rougarou gets you.
Yes.
Is that the same thing that we're
talking
about?
All those things are true.
Okay.
It has, I think, Rougarou kind of werewolfy deep in the swamps of Louisiana. It's absolutely terrifying. And I hope in all my research that I prove is untrue, but I'm just not sure because it's the swamps.
Well, and honestly, based on the sound of your voice right now, I hope you survive your research.
I'm dying. Like I'm scared to death already. But this is the hard journalism that Southern Mysteries Podcast is. I am willing to put aside my fear to get to the bottom of the Rougarou.
Now, the last time you promised hard journalism, you didn't even know how to Google pickle and for that New Year's episode.
It's just, that's semantics.
Okay.
It's all semantics.
All right.
Yeah. It is going to be hard journalism.
I just don't want us to win a fake news award from the Trump administration.
We got to have something to shoot for.